This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Syria. I welcome Josh Rogan, writing global opinions for The Washington Post. Josh introduced me to the horrors of Syria many years ago, more than a decade ago. HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. That is a new name to me. Before this, it was the Nusra Front. And before this, there were elements of al-Qaeda and ISIS. What do we know about HTS? What do we have doubts about? Or what do we want to know about HTS?
Right. Well, HTS is sort of the lead group in what's a coalition of rebel groups that join together in a joint fighting force to take over the country and kick out the dictator in like 11 days. In 11 days, they revealed the Assad regime and its forces to be so fragile that he fled the country and fled to Moscow. And most of the Syrian army people either ran away or took off their uniforms and put on civilian clothes and went home. And so HTS is a designated terrorist organization, but what's HTS today is not the same thing as it was 10 years ago. And what you have to understand is that, you know, these people have been fighting for 14 years. That means if you're a 20-year-old man in the Syrian revolution, you've been at war since you were 6 years old. So it's not as if these people are connected to like global terrorism or really have any interests or ambitions other than freeing their country from the dictator Assad, which they just did. And the reason that HTS, the successor of al-Nusra Front, became the most important group in leading the revolution is because all of the rest of the people who were assisting them left. The United States stopped helping them. So if you were a Syrian fighting for freedom, HTS was the only game in town. And now they're handing over government. They have handed over governance to an interim government that will set up elections for a democratic representative system in Syria for the first time. And that's pretty amazing that, you know, you could say, okay, well, HDS did this or this or this in 2014. But in 2024, they organized the revolution and organized the offensive, overthrew the Assad regime, and then handed over power willingly. So I think that's just a bit of data to show you that things are a little bit more complicated than they might initially seem.
Your column points to a telephone interview you conducted with the Bishop of Aleppo, Hassan Jalouf. What did you learn about the fear of the Christians in Syria?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people in the United States and, you know, have supported Assad for a long time under this idea that he was the protector of the minority, specifically the protector of Christians in Syria. And what the Bishop of Aleppo told me, and he's the top Catholic guy in Syria, appointed by the Pope in the Vatican, he said that's not true. It was never true. He said the Catholics and the Christians are safe and sound. And in fact, there's a ton of evidence on the internet to show that's in fact the case. And he said that, you know, don't believe the propaganda that Assad was the protector of Christians. That's just what he used to divide people and give Syrians some credit for being able to live together. They've just been through 14 years of absolute hell on earth. They're not about to start killing each other for no reason. OK, they want to stop the war. OK, and the common enemy, the person who is stoking all of these internal divisions, Assad is gone. So, again, let's give him a couple days at least to figure out the path forward. But don't worry about, you know, a mass slaughter of the Christians. That doesn't seem to be in the cards.
Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah, you write of them having all suffered a defeat simultaneously because of Syria. What does it look like? What, going forward, what is it that they can do about it? Because these are dangerous individuals.
Well, it's interesting. I interviewed one of the rebel commanders yesterday who was sitting in Damascus, and he said, listen, we're going to have to form new relationships with all of our regional partners, and that includes Russia and Iran. And so don't assume that the new Syria is just going to be, you know, a super friend of the Emiratis and the Germans and the Americans. That's not going to be the case. The new Syrian government's going to have negotiations with all of their interlocutors. And I'm sure that the Russians and the Iranians will continue to play a role. I think the Turks, of course, will continue to play an increasingly big role. And then you'll have the Qataris and, you know, the Emiratis, et cetera. But in a strategic sense, yes, the fall of Assad is a blow to Russia and Iran because they controlled the country, because they used it to ship weapons and drugs and God knows what else all over the world. And that's not going to happen anymore. So in that sense, it's a blow to their efforts to, you know, exert their mischief all over the region. But I wouldn't say count them completely out of Syria.
The refugees in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Turkey, in Europe, all through the region, millions, I don't know the number. Are they going to return home? Have they been told that it's safe to return home? Are people leaving now because they don't know their fate?
You know, what we've seen so far is tens of thousands of refugees rushing home to Syria. And it's only been 2 days. And that's likely to continue. They're not waiting for permission. They want to go home. They've always wanted to go home. They couldn't go home because Assad was going to kill them. And then Assad was telling everybody, well, if you get rid of me, there's going to be more refugees. But the opposite was true. And now we see, it's obvious, that Assad was the obstacle to peace. And the only way to make Syria a place where refugees were even willing to try to go home was to get rid of Assad. And that's exactly, in fact, what's happening.
And the Israelis, we're told, are occupying the Golan Heights, the Druze villages of the Golan Heights, and the DMZ. They are, to my understanding, also launching airstrikes. 480 is what London says. And the Times of Israel says the Assyrian Navy has been destroyed, the Syrian Air Force has been destroyed. What is Israel's risk here in a divided country or a divided state, which is, as you say, give them 2 days, but there's not time right now because there's an active war in Lebanon and in Gaza. So what is it that Israel can do, must do, in order to secure its border?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess that's a matter of opinion. I think that the Israeli decision to do 500 airstrikes on Syria the day after its liberated is pretty controversial, because if you think about it, that's not, you know, the new government hasn't even had a chance to interact with anyone, including the Israelis. And if you're starting a new relationship with a new government, 500 airstrikes, not really exactly like a you know, same thing as bringing over a housewarming gift. And you have to just sort of think about it from the Syrians' perspective, just for 1 minute. We'll get to the Israeli perspective. But from the Syrians' perspective, they liberated their country. They want to meet with everybody. They want good relations. They want economic aid. They want development. The last thing they want is 500 Israeli airstrikes, but the Israelis decided that, that's what they were going to do. Now, from the Israeli perspective, sure, they're taking advantage of this situation to degrade Syria's ability to do mischief. And I get that. You could understand why they would want to take every advantage to what they see as Israeli short-term interest, which is to make sure Syria doesn't have any weapons to threaten them. Yeah. But again, there's really no indication that I can see that the new Syrian government is going to finish a 14-year war and then try to start a war with Israel right away. But there is, I think, a feeling amongst the Syrian, well, I should say the Syrian government, what used to be the Syrian opposition, that, if there's an amount of war that Israel could bring upon Syria that would force them to react. And I think everyone should, again, should just, you know, take a beat and let the Syrians, first of all, celebrate their liberation after 54 years of oppression, and then, engage them diplomatically before you start bombing everything. But maybe I'm crazy. That's just my idea.
Josh Rogan, Washington Post.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.